Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me in studio, I'm super excited about this. Dr. Ian Smith is the best-selling author of, well, you know, a lot of books. But first off, I'm talking about Blast the Sugar Out, which is his latest, Lower Blood Sugar, Lose Weight, Live Better. He wrote the Shred Diet books, if you're not familiar. He was also a very prominent figure on one of my favorite shows that I'm sad has gone, Celebrity Fit Club. Thank you for being in studio, Dr. Ian.
Good to see you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, as a medical doctor, we're serious here, people. We were talking to a graduate of Harvard, Columbia, and the University of Chicago's Pritzker School of Medicine, and you're an avid fitness enthusiast, obviously, and a sportsman. Do you ever relax?
I do. In fact, I tell people all the time that you have to have off or down days. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just as important as having on days, because particularly, like, for example, when you're lifting weights,
right?
You know, you have to have recovery. Your body needs your recovery to recover. And I think the same thing just in life in general. You need just to do veg out and do nothing. So sometimes, you know, I'll choose a day and just watch all my stuff on like Showtime or Netflix or something like that and just do nothing.
That's so nice. It's good to know that you're human and you can relax and kick
absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely.
All right. So the passion for you to want to heal people, mm-hmm. when did that start? When did you know you wanted to help fix people?
Well, you know, I wanted to be a doctor when I was 9 years old or earlier, 8 years old. I always wanted to be a brain surgeon, a neurosurgeon.
Wow.
Yeah. I was lying in my grandfather's bed. I'm from Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And I was reading this article in the famous Ebony magazine, which is the building was right down the street where they're headquartered, Chicago based. But I was reading about the paucity of African-American neurosurgeons in the country. There weren't enough of them. And so I said, okay, I want to be a brain surgeon.
Right.
And so my whole life, I wanted to be a neurosurgeon. I mean, I did everything. And if you had met any of my friends from back then, they would have said, you know, Ian's going to be a neurosurgeon. And then what happened is, you know, life, you know, deals you curveballs and everything else. When I started to actually shadow some neurosurgeons, they weren't very happy. They just weren't happy.
It's
true. And their hours were horrible. And now, as I got older and understood lifestyle, right? I didn't know that as a kid, but lifestyle is important to you as you get older. And, you know, when I was shadowing them, they were in the hospital and it was dark.
Mm-hmm.
When they left, it was dark.
Wow.
So they only saw daylight if they had time to run outside.
For lunch
or something. Mm-hmm. They typically didn't do that. They were downstairs in the cafeteria in the basement of the hospital. So I just, you know, I made a very gut-wrenching decision that I was not going to be a neurosurgeon despite my whole life kind of getting myself hyped for it. And then I decided to go on an orthopedic surgery.
Wow.
And the weird thing is everyone kept saying you should be an orthopedic surgeon, but I didn't want to do it because it was so stereotypical that an athlete would become an orthopedic surgeon. It was kind of, so I didn't want to do, my whole life I've tried not to do stereotype. So so I matched and started training for orthopedic surgery, and then TV happened and got in the way of everything. It really did. Talk about a curveball. Mm-hmm. And so then I started doing television. I was on the Today Show for a while. I wrote a column for Time Magazine, for New York Daily News. So I started this journalistic career by accident, by the way. After interning here at WMAQ for Art Norman on NBC, that's when I really, when I was a med student here at University of Chicago, I interned with him, not because I wanted a career in journalism, but because I've always been fascinated by the news.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know before I was going to go into the hospital and get completely killed as an intern.
Right.
And do all the scut work that we have to do as a nobody on the totem pole. Before I did that, I wanted to go into the newsroom and just see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know what chance I'd have in the rest of my life to do that. And then all of a sudden, I became a medical journalist.
Amazing.
I mean, I don't know.
But no, you're a perfect example of walking through the open doors, right? And going with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And basically kind of trusting that you're being guided where you're supposed to be guided as you move along. I also think that you're a grateful person, from what I've heard of you, that your gratitude is a big deal for you.
Yeah.
And in everything that we do, if our system is feeling resistance, you know, like those neurosurgeons that you talked about, if they're miserable and they're not seeing sunlight, they're obviously having seasonal affective disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And so what really bothers me about some people in the medical community that I have met is they don't walk the talk, right? Mm-hmm. Here you are, a container of health, mm-hmm. where you're also talking about continuing that container of health for others.
Yep.
And so many doctors that I know are either, you know, party hard at night. I know a lot of doctors that party hard at day and night. but they also, it's because they're burning it at both ends and they're exhausted. Why do we do this in our medical schools when we're teaching people to heal others? We deprive them of sleep. Mm-hmm. We make them jump through a million hoops. Nobody would want the tired doctor operating on them or the tired pilot flying their plane.
No.
So why do we do this?
Well, because it's an extremely anachronistic system.
Okay.
And it's a system that has been steeped in tradition, sometimes irrational tradition. And it's very difficult to get the generation to say, despite the fact that I had to go through all these hoops, I'm going to remove those hoops so other generations don't have to do it. It's very hard for people to do that. Think about it. You have to dissociate yourself mm-hmm. from all the trials and tribulations that you went through and say, okay, even though I did it, it still wasn't good for me. I'm going to not do this to someone else. And it's hard to break that.
Sure.
You know, it's a chain. And the other part of it also, by the way, and I'm glad you mentioned that, so many of our best and brightest are not going into medicine for the very reasons why you just mentioned.
Right.
Because why? It's almost like a torture situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need to torture people to become
good
professionals,
yeah, right?
You don't need to.
Right.
I mean, sure, there is some inherent rigor mm-hmm. to becoming a lawyer or a teacher or a scholar
paying your
or
dues,
whatever.
Yeah, I get it.
There's inherent rigor to all these professions.
Right.
But you don't have to add on to it. And mm-hmm. so I think that the culture of tormenting and torturing medical students and medical professionals, I think it's getting better. I know it's getting better. It still has a ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
But for the sake of all of us, by the way, who will require physicians at some point in our life, we need to make sure that we're attracting the best and brightest and not discouraging them.
Correct. And that is, so maybe just an awareness in the conversation that we're having now will be helpful, because if I'm noticing it as a person whose father was diagnosed with brain cancer, so mm-hmm. we go and meet with these neurosurgeons, mm-hmm. there needed to be a class on bedside manner.
I mean, hello.
And speaking a language that the people in the family that are dealing with this tragic circumstance can understand. It was unbelievable.
That's, you know what? That's how I started my career in medical journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'd go into a patient's room, and the head doctor, the attending doctor, the big cheeses, mm-hmm. they'd be speaking to the patients or the families, and they're speaking in medicalese, and the patients and family members are looking at them like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
And what I would do is, after our rounds were over, mm-hmm. then I would slip back in
and
sit down
English.
With the family and talk to them and break it down for them and said,
yeah.
this is, okay,
mm-hmm.
he's saying hypertension, which means that blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And they were so grateful.
Right.
And people are intimidated to ask doctors mm-hmm. questions. Or they're nervous, or they're scared, or they're, you know, they're emotionally not able to deal with it at that time.
Right.
And so when I started doing television, everyone kept saying, we love you because you take really complicated information, mm-hmm. you don't dumb it down, but you distill it so that we get it and understand it and we can actually use it. And that my whole career, my books included, has been all about taking this knowledge that I'm blessed enough mm-hmm. to know and to understand and to give it to everyone else, because that's the whole purpose of it, right? The whole
right.
purpose of me acquiring this knowledge is not to say that I'm some smart doctor.
Right.
The whole purpose is that I can help people.
Right.
And you're not helping people if you're sitting there talking, you know, all these sesquipedalian words with six syllables. Who cares about that, right? So anyway, I'm very passionate about making sure that doctors communicate with people.
Right.
And not with names and charts.
As people. And I think a lot of it, too, is when they're a teaching hospital, as you mentioned. So I have my son at Evanston Hospital as a teaching hospital. So the doctor would come in and he would say all these things, and then every single one of them would stick their forearm between my legs without even buying me a drink first. I'm like, hi, how you doing? What's up? Okay, she's 3 centimeters dilated. Everyone else want to check? Come on over. You in the back. You haven't gotten in there. Let's go.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous. And
know.
Then they're talking in their legal, in their terms, and the doctor can teach them, but they're forgetting that there's a patient
absolutely.
And, you know, and an anxious couple wondering if the baby's okay because I fell down the stairs.
That's right.
You know, and then that's a true story. I fell down the stairs at 24 weeks and I started dilating and going into contractions and they had to stop it. And thankfully, I cooked a good son. He was 9 pounds, 7 ounces, but
He's
it
really
was
cooked.
Scary there.
Yeah.
He really was cooked. But, you know, the thing that you talk about in Blast the Sugar Out, I want to switch over to this. What got you motivated, or maybe other things did, but your grandmother's brush, as we say, with type 2 diabetes, the rock in your family, this sweet woman who was told that she had to make some lifestyle changes. And when you talk about teaching an old dog new tricks, I'm not saying your grandma was old, she was set in her ways. Mm-hmm. How hard is it? It is possible to do, isn't it?
Well, it is. And I tell people all the time, I was just talking to my father-in-law, who I said to him, I'm an avid golfer. And he's playing golf, but he has the worst habits. And I keep telling him, if you would just practice the right way, you can actually drop 10 strokes off your score right away.
What do you mean in his golf game? I thought you meant like smoking cigars, drinking bourbon.
His swing pattern, his swing is horrible, right? So I'm telling him at lunch the other day, hey, listen, if you could just, you know what he said to me?
Yeah.
I'm too old to change.
Oh.
And I just don't buy into that,
No.
My grandmother, I'm a first-year medical student. She gets diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. She's the rock of our family. We had no idea what that meant in my family. Mm-hmm. No one ever had that. Mm-hmm. We're scared to death. We think it's a death sentence. All I knew at the time was, oh, my goodness, she can't have sugar. Like, that's all I knew.
And
she may have an amputation. So I run home from medical school. I was first year. I didn't know any medicine at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I really went on a crash course of understanding diabetes and sugar and how the body processes it. And lo and behold, one of the things back then they kept saying was exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Exercise. So we took this little old lady from the South, put her in this gym, and she was in there next to these big sweaty dudes walking on the treadmill.
Pumping some iron.
Yeah, everything. And she dropped her blood sugars in half.
Wow.
And the next time she went to her doctor, he said, what are you doing? And she said, why? He said, because I got to cut your medication down. Your blood sugars are so much better than they were before. And she said, well, my grandson's having me exercising. This book basically is to address a serious epidemic in the country. We're in a sugar epidemic.
Totally.
29.1 million diabetics, 86 million pre-diabetics on the verge of having diabetes, and millions addicted to sugar.
And aren't there 2 million that don't even know they're diabetic?
Don't even know.
Yeah.
Don't even know.
Oh, my God.
And so I wanted to write this book for all of us because sugar is so prevalent in our foods and our society, and we don't even know it. It's hidden in things.
Mm-hmm.
Yogurt, for example, something that you think is automatically healthy, 36 grams of sugar.
Even a bagel. Right.
So many things.
Yeah.
So I wanted to write this book so that people could understand that it's not that sugar is bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's the amount of excess sugar that's bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I ever ask you to eat perfectly. I don't eat perfectly. In all my books, I talk about eating realistically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want you going to a store buying only organic. I don't want you spending all your money on groceries. I want you to be able to take accessible food that you can find anywhere, be able to put it into a plan and prepare it, still have some sugar and sweetness and some fun, but not be totally inebriated or intoxicated by sugar. And so this Blast of Sugar Out was a 5-week plan that I took hundreds of people to test it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tremendous. The average weight loss in 5 weeks was 20 pounds, and the average blood sugar drop was 30%. So it really, and I'm so happy because I kept saying to myself, I've got to speak to sugar, and not just for diabetics, like I said, it's for all of us. Even myself, I was telling you that, I drink a lot of fruit juice, and fruit juice has the right type of sugar in the sense of it has vitamins, minerals. And
sometimes fiber.
Yeah, fiber, right. Mm-hmm. But still, it's a lot of sugar.
Right.
So I cut my fruit juice down, and I only drink fresh juice, to 1 cup a day, and the rest water with a little squeeze of citrus in it because I like a little taste, a little kick to my water. But even I have experienced my energy levels are high.
Mm-hmm.
My pee is nice and clear. seriously.
These are important diets.
Yeah. So, and I feel so much better.
Right.
So with this book, I wanted people to realize that this is something that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, everyone listening to us knows someone, whether it's a coworker, a family member, or a church member, who is diabetic or pre-diabetic. We all do.
We do. Yeah.
And this is a book to say to people, you can do it. It's affordable. The food's affordable. It's accessible. There are recipes in the back.
I love the recipes. You even have a whole section on smoothie recipes. And it's like, and they, again, accessible, easy. It's not 45 ingredients with 45 steps.
No.
I was like, okay. And I want to read this one thing here. I hate that I got these glasses now. It's like,
I think I'm heading there.
God. Here's your Nutri-Nugget here. You say sugar addiction is a real and sometimes serious condition. According to a brain scan study from the U.S. National Institute on Drug Abuse, sugar can affect the brain similar to the way cocaine and alcohol impact it. These changes can lead to more cravings for sugar. Now, that when I told that to my mom, because she has a serious ice cream addiction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is nothing that's going to talk her out of her ice cream on the couch,
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
And she also says... my weight gain is just from my metabolism change. I'm like, it has nothing to do with all the ice cream. So, you know, she's type 2 diabetic. Mm-hmm. She won't knock out. She drinks diet iced tea, which I want to talk about the diet sodas and what they do to tricking your brain. Because a lot of people think, oh, if I just switch to diet, we're good. But that's not true, is it?
No, it's not. You know, it's, so let's talk about what you just read in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So sugar has the same effect of drugs, cocaine or heroin, on the brain.
And the pleasure centers just go
nuts.
The
brain has a pleasure center, which is made of all these. It's a very complicated neuronal network. But your pleasure center basically says, wow, I like that. And so I want more of it. And what happens when you eat sugar, the more sugar you eat, the more it takes for you to be satisfied and the more cravings you have to get more.
It's just like the people who are cocaine and alcohol
addicts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's the same thing.
Yep.
And so it's a true addiction. And your body releases dopamine, which is a happy chemical.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you eat this sugar, you're getting all this dopamine into your brain. Your brain feels good and wants more all the time. But what people have to understand is that there are two types of people, I think, or three types of people. There are people who can have a little bit of something and stop.
Yeah.
There are people who can have a little bit of something, need to have all of it. And there are people in the middle.
Right.
Right. And you have to know who you are. I don't, you know, I can't tell you who you are. But if you're someone who literally, if you take a spoonful, you have to have the whole pint of ice cream. That means that you really need to not, I'm not saying don't have it, but the amount of times you have it, you really have to regulate it. If you're someone like myself who, and I like sweets like anybody else, by the way, I'm not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I like chocolate chip cookies and brownies and I bake them myself.
Nice.
But, you know, I have a couple and I'm done. A couple cookies, I'm good.
Right.
And I think that what I'm trying to say in the book to people is it's an addiction and don't say it's other things. Admit that it's an addiction. It's okay.
Right.
Millions have it.
Right.
But there's a way you can also reduce it. And that's what I'm trying to do with this book. So in these 5 weeks, I don't eliminate sugar. I reduce sugar. Mm-hmm. And by the time that you're done with it, and people were saying to me after finishing the program, they said, wow, when I drink what I used to drink, it's so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes like syrup.
Right.
Because their taste buds and their accommodations now
shifted. Yeah.
Right. And they don't want all that sweet stuff anymore.
No.
And so, but the key is to get people to believe that they can change, right?
It's
and anything,
so true.
Right?
And that's the big thing. When you get your grandma to work out at the gym, lift weights, go on the treadmill when she was like the sweet lady who liked fried
plump
food.
Church lady,
you know,
that's
you
right,
say the
that's
plump
right.
church lady is how you describe her. And it's like, oh my goodness, that is a visual that people can get on board and then they can see. But here's the other thing. I think the word diet is a problem in our society, and here's why. Die, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Diet.
Yeah.
It's already a vibrational failure.
Yeah.
It's like, I call it a live it. Like you say, this is lifestyle.
Yeah.
This isn't just cutting it out and hoping for 5 weeks you drop the weight and then you can go back to regular, you know, Snickers between meals.
Yeah.
This is changing your lifestyle. Live it, don't diet. And so I know that word is important, diet, but when you think of the vibration of course you're going to fail. I'm on a diet.
I've had these battles with my publisher for so many years.
Yeah.
Because I had feel the same way you feel.
Yeah.
And that I lose all the time because they look at it from a marketing standpoint and
right.
that customer they research customers' behavior.
Sure.
So customer behavior says if it says diet, people are going to know what it is and they're attracted to it. If it says plan or
life
guide,
change.
Yeah, it, people their eyes just kind of glaze over. So that's the unfortunate part of where we are. But let me give you some quick numbers.
Yes.
So the average American American Heart Association, it's the excess sugars we're worried about, the added sugars.
Right.
Not the sugars that come naturally in fruits and vegetables, because there are natural sugars, but it's the added sugars. All those words in the back of the book, the label that say OS, you know, glucose, fructose, sucrose, maltose, no good for you, galactose. Here's the idea. The American Heart Association says for women, 6 teaspoons of added sugars per day. That's about 100 calories from sugar.
And that's the most that
that's
we should
most
have.
Per day.
Okay.
For men, it's 9 teaspoons, which is about 150 calories per day.
Okay.
The average American consumes 39 teaspoons of added sugar a day.
Whoops.
Okay. 39.
That's making some pleasure zones
okay.
happy in the brain.
Right?
Sure.
Now, people wonder why we have problems with heart disease. Now, look at it for a week. In the course of a week, 3 pounds. Of sugar.
Of sugar. Just sugar.
3 pounds.
Wow.
Course of a month, about 13 pounds.
Wow.
And then in a whole year, the average American consumes 156 pounds of sugar. pounds of sugar. Mm-hmm. It's so you take 31 bags of the sugar bags in the mm-hmm. store and line them up, and that's what you consume, the average American consumes in the course of a year, and most of it in sugary drinks.
I was going to say in liquid form.
Sugary drinks.
Hidden in liquid form. Yeah. And if you're out there listening and you're driving to school, you better think about what's in your refrigerator right now. Look right now next to your console. What do you mm-hmm. have? A Mountain Dew? I'm not trying to get them to sue me. I'm just right. saying everything in moderation.
Everything.
I know a family that literally goes through those gigantic things of Mountain Dew for a day.
And four?
For a day. There's three kids, two adults. But for a day. Think about that. That's like... almost a whole thing a person, right?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it's awful. I mean, I'm cringing just thinking about it. That's how much they go through. And they're all very large, and they are not working out. And it's just, they are just, I feel like, endangering their lives every day by doing that. But they love their pleasure centers. They love to have that fix, right? And it's the caffeine and the sugar with that drink, right?
Look at the numbers, though. That's 64 ounces, mm-hmm. fluid ounces,
yep.
right? A 12-ounce bottle of soda, most sodas, mm-hmm. has 36 grams of sugar.
Right.
So if it's a 12 ounce for 36 grams, they now have a little more than five. Look
right.
at that.
Right.
And you said they're consuming four of those in a
mm-hmm. The family's consuming four in a day. And I only know this because we went on vacation with them. And
off the charts.
It's ridiculous.
Off the charts. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something. I had my producer on Rachel Ray. Mm-hmm. She just had a twins about 6 months ago.
Okay.
So she's got the book. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, I'm going to see. I'm not diabetic. I said, well, no, it's for anybody. Mm-hmm. She cut her sugar out, and she dropped 10 pounds in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And when I went into the studio the other week to see her, I was like, holy cow, what are you doing? She says, I'm blasting the sugar out.
Yeah.
She goes, in all honesty, I didn't believe it at first.
Yeah.
Because I didn't realize how much sugar I was consuming.
Sure.
She didn't realize it.
And that's the thing. You don't know
you
until
don't know
you keep track.
But she started making swaps. There's a whole page of swaps in the book. Mm-hmm. She said, I started doing swaps. She said, it's unbelievable. So I think that people need to be first aware mm-hmm. of how much they're consuming to realize that it is just over the top. And the way that really hurts us is so much of it is hidden.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yogurt, 36 grams of yogurt. Isn't yogurt healthy?
One would think,
right?
But here's, you know, you list out the sugars, and I want to ask a couple questions about this because I'm a big agave syrup fan because mm-hmm. I thought that was better than plain old white sugar. First, I was going with brown sugar, and then I went to agave, and now it looks like I need to switch to honey.
Yeah, you know, it depends on what you want to put it in. I mean,
just
you know,
coffee in the morning. I have one cup of coffee, and I do, you know, some cream, not even cream. I do like 2% of lactose, you know, and then a little bit of agave just
yeah.
to sweeten it for taste.
Yeah.
But now that I'm looking at it, it seems like it has almost as many calories as regular white sugar.
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
So the issue when you're choosing sugars, real sugars, mm-hmm. you try to compare the calories, number one, to
okay.
see which has less calories. But in most cases, they're all within 10% of each other, right?
Okay.
So the other thing that we try to see is which is going to cause a greater spike of blood sugars in your body.
Mm.
So all sugars are not treated equally inside the body.
Right.
And you want, when you're eating foods, your body breaks foods down into sugar.
Mm-hmm.
The slower your body breaks the food down to sugar, the better you are because the less of a rise of blood sugar you have.
Mm.
When your blood sugar rises really fast, then your pancreas releases all this insulin hormone.
Mm-hmm.
Too much of it, actually. It's an over-secretion. So there's too much insulin hormone released mm-hmm. to eat up that sugar, and it ends up over-reducing the sugar. So it takes up too much of the sugar
mm-hmm.
and it stores it as fat.
Oh.
Okay, the insulin's job is to take sugar, to make it available to the cells,
mm-hmm.
and the cells use it as a source of energy. Sugar is energy, by the way.
Yeah.
But if you aren't doing anything and you don't have a use for the energy, energy can either be created or destroyed. It's got to be put somewhere. The body stores that extra energy as fat.
Got it.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to eat foods that get broken down slowly
mm-hmm.
so your body can handle them better. Rather than this huge deluge of mm-hmm. sugar, which your body can't handle very well, and it ends up being converted into fat.
Okay. So then if I switch just to honey from my agave,
mm-hmm.
that's not a big, huge calorie change. But what it is changing the chemistry of what I'm putting in because the honey's got some nutritional values
yes.
that the agave doesn't
yes.
have.
And the sugar spike also.
Isn't as high.
Right?
Okay.
It has a slower rise of blood sugar with honey than you do with agave syrup.
Got it. And then what about fake sugar? What does that do to your body?
Here's the issue with fake sugar. So there are two major issues. One is that people, a long time ago, there were studies that showed that artificial sweeteners could potentially cause cancer in rats.
Right.
Never demonstrated in humans. Mm-hmm. So this controversy has been around for a very long time.
Right.
It predates me probably. Mm-hmm. And so the concern is whether or not these synthetic chemicals, these synthetic sugars, really do have some long-term consequences on our health. Yes, they have no calories in them. That's great. There are no mm-hmm. calories in them. That's the first issue. Are these chemicals harmful in the long term? Mm-hmm. The second issue is that new studies are showing that even though they are artificial sweeteners with no calories, that they make your body crave sugar even more.
Because it's actually sweeter sort of than the real sugar.
Absolutely.
I would say.
Sometimes 100 times sweeter than real sugar. So you have now this bigger craving for sweetness because you're having these artificial sweeteners, which are sweeter than regular sugar, even though they're helping you because they have no calories.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's a conundrum. Mm-hmm. My answer typically has been eat a little bit of the real stuff.
Just a little.
Eat the real stuff. Mm-hmm. And by the way, brown sugar and white sugar is the same thing, just the molasses has been removed.
Okay.
That's all white sugar is.
That's all.
White sugar, brown sugar means that sugar comes brown, by the way.
Right, right.
And you wash the molasses out, mm-hmm. and it, you know, you crystallize, it becomes white.
Right.
But it's the same kind of, it's the same chemical properties.
All right. That's good to know.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on these cleanses, right? Yeah. You know, I see it every January. You're walking through the store. They've got the maple syrup, the cayenne pepper, the lemon, and everybody's going to go do that for 40 days and then feel like they're going to fall off the couch. What do you think that does to the body?
Well, first of all, let me be in full disclosure. I have been a great opponent of cleanses for a very long time mm-hmm. because I felt as though they were unsafe. I felt as though people were selling people a bill of goods mm-hmm. or snake oil. And I also felt like people would go on these cleanses and then they would just rebound and gain all the weight back. And then some.
Yep.
So, in all, full disclosure again, a couple years ago, I decided to write a cleanse. But the cleanse I decided to write was a cleanse using natural food. So it was not a cleanse where you can only have three ingredients or you're overly restricted mm-hmm. or you are calorically restricted. It's a cleanse of natural good foods that cleanse the body in a natural way. And so it was called the Shred Power Cleanse.
Right.
And people like it because it allows you to eat. It's an eating cleanse.
Ha-ha.
And it's only 2 weeks.
Okay.
Right? It's only 2 weeks.
That's so doable.
Right. See, that's my whole thing. Right. Mm-hmm. My whole thing was, first of all, people have to eat. Who wants to go... First of all, who wants to go 4 weeks of doing a cleanse?
Right.
That's too much. Mm-hmm. 30 days is too much. So make it 2 weeks and then let people eat food. So they have some salads, some soups, some smoothies, but you get to have some real stuff mm-hmm. in there, vegetables. And people love it. It works very well. The problem with cleanses in general is that they are not only trendy, but they malnourish you.
Mm-hmm.
People are not getting all the vitamins and phytonutrients they need.
And their muscles can't handle it either.
Absolutely
if they
not.
Go work out, they can't handle it.
Where are you getting your protein from, unless you're having protein shakes?
Sure.
But it's these cleanses, a lot of them are very dangerous, and you really need, you know, buyer beware. You know, try to do cleanses that allow you to eat real food mm-hmm. that will actually help your liver cleanse. Because your liver is your biggest cleansing organ in the body. It scrubs your blood. So there are enzymes in your liver that help cleanse the body. There are foods that help activate those enzymes mm-hmm. and make them better. But let me just say, for the record, that the body is a great natural detoxifier. Your mm-hmm. kidneys, your lungs, your skin, your gastrointestinal tract, and your liver, they detoxify us all day long.
Right.
Cleanses, the good cleanse can give it a little boost, that's all. But it's not to replace what your body's already doing.
What ingredient does the best to wash out the toxins that are already in your intestines? I mean, I know there's pills and stuff, but is there something that people can eat? I know fiber.
It's all about fiber.
Okay.
Things like Swiss chard and kale, things like lemon.
Okay.
Lemon is really good for you. I mean, broccoli's good. Mm-hmm. These things help, you know, remove toxins. And that's a whole nother, you know, podcast about toxins. But, you know, your body will take a very good thing and break it down, metabolize it, breaks it down so we could use it for energy. And unfortunately, a byproduct of even good things is a toxin.
Mm-hmm.
And so your body has to get rid of these toxins. They accumulate in your body, in your fat cells typically. They store mm-hmm. these toxins. And your body needs to get rid of them. And so, you know, there's certain foods that help facilitate the release and mm-hmm. expression out of these toxins. But, you know, I say if you do the cleanse once every 6 months, it'd be great. And it's also like a tune-up. Like in my cleanse and the Shred Power Cleanse in 2 weeks, People lost 10 pounds, but they lowered their blood pressure, mm-hmm. they increased their energy levels, and they just felt cleaner. Right.
And that's the thing. It's about our container. You know, with our gas light goes on in our car and we race to the gas station and fill it up, we wouldn't put high fructose corn syrup in our car and expect it to run well.
I say this all the time.
So we do this on our bodies.
I say it all the time, how we abuse our bodies.
Yes.
How it's and people don't think about it. You know, like you just said, you go to a gas station right away and you put the best gas you can put in there. Mm-hmm. You would not put junk. You wouldn't put mud in there and anything else. And we take our bodies, which is a machine that is more complicated,
right,
more sophisticated, and more beautiful than a car, and we treat it like crap.
Right.
We do, and it's terrible. And then we're surprised, by the way.
The reaction.
We're surprised that, you know, our joints are hurting, mm-hmm. or the scale is not going the right direction, or that our doctors are putting in medications. We're not taking care of ourselves.
When I was pregnant and I was told to eat all the best foods and all the, it was like I was, of course, I'm a condo for a kid. But we're a condo every day.
Every day.
For us. So why would people treat themselves the best they could ever treat themselves for 9 months and then go right back to all the bad habits
all
afterwards?
That stuff. And, you know, here's the other part of it, and not to get controversial, but the food manufacturing industry should be ashamed of itself because we are the richest country in the world. We have the greatest resources in the world. And the fact that we will process and package foods the way that we do and feed it to ourselves and to our kids particularly and give them all this junk for the sake of a dollar is disgusting. I mean, a whole nother podcast is about how bad this stuff is that we're really eating and how it doesn't have to be that bad.
No.
But it's all about business. It's all about increasing shelf life of food products.
Right.
It's all about making it sustainable, increasing your profit margin. But it's not about saving the environment. It's not about whether or not you're getting the best phytonutrients. Mm-hmm. And it's shameful. And the unfortunate part is that very wealthy people can afford to eat the best of the best. People who are on a limited budget, limited income, they're going to have to go with what's economical. And it's just that bothers me to no end.
Truly. Every time I see MSG as an ingredient, and we know how bad this is and that it's addicting, and it's in everything.
Everything.
I mean, it's truly in everything. Almost every soup. And now suddenly, you know, Kraft is saying, oh, we're going to take the dyes and chemicals out today. You know, now in 2017, they're finally doing this.
Yeah, right.
Right. They could have done this in 1970.
Yes. You knew this 40 years ago.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, because people are saying stuff,
right,
or better yet, because your competitors are doing it.
Right.
And because people are starting to buy your competitor, now you want to do it. Not because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
Oh, it just drives me. It drives me bonkers. I'm telling you. I'm creating this juice. I love juice. I'm creating this fresh juice. It's called Smash Juice, and it's all juice, 100%.
Okay.
No water added. No sugar added. But I'm making it affordable. You know, I'm not gonna make much money. I may lose money, but
that's fine.
But I'm making it affordable. So I'm starting with Treasure Island, the grocery stores here in Chicago. But my idea is, my philosophy is, you have to make foods accessible to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Not just people who can afford to buy, you know, $9 juices.
No. And that's the thing, the $9 juice. I was like, I'm going to treat myself and I'm going to this juice bar and I get this thing and it was literally $9.18 for this thing. And I was like, I'm just going to milk it for about 2 hours and feel
$9.
Really good.
Yeah, don't go to New York. It's $12
I'm
in New York.
Sure it is. Well, we mentioned earlier Celebrity Fit Club and addiction and a lot of things. And we can change our diet all day long, but if we don't get what's going on up here in our mental game and heal the wounds from childhood, we're never going to get a diet that's going to work. You're smiling.
I'm smiling because the book I really want to write is a very small book. And the book is about above the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Dieting really starts above the neck.
It is.
The rest of it is perfunctory. The rest of it just follows. But it's the mind that starts it. And the reason why, and I've been doing this for so long, the reason why, what separates people who are successful from those who are not successful is that the successful people typically have it together upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that unsuccessful people can't do it. Sometimes they start at the wrong time. They're not ready. They got stressors.
Mm-hmm.
Bad relationships, trouble at work, financial problems.
Terrible childhood.
Right. So they're starting at the wrong time.
Right.
But people who are really successful have it together in their mind, and it's the most important thing to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it really starts above the mind. So I really want to write this book that is not a diet, but it is about the mental side of dieting.
Truly. Because we are trying to fill a hole with food, with wine, with shopping, with chocolate. It's because we don't feel whole. and we're trying to fill the hole.
Absolutely.
And
it's
until until we stop self-medicating and start becoming self-aware, it requires, I always talk about this, it requires looking under the hood. You don't have to dwell on 1974, but you got to look there and you got to acknowledge what happened. And then we can move on and decide to forgive or not. But either way, it's a part of our makeup, you know? It's a part of
who we
are.
People say to me, I'll say, okay, well, they said, Dr. Ian, I would like to lose weight. Okay, great. I'll say, okay, you know, what's your weight looking like? Oh, I don't own a scale. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in scales. But you have to know where you are. Even if it's a number you don't like,
right?
Even if it disappoints you, at least have a starting point.
But see, I disagree because I have a pair of jeans and that's my starting point.
Oh, okay.
It's a pair of jeans I've had since 1989. And if they fit, I'm in a good mood. And if they don't, I'm in a bad mood, and I know by how my body fits in them, but
that's perfect. You have some kind of measurement.
I do have a measurement.
Yeah,
yes,
have a measurement.
Exactly.
Right? All I'm saying, you got to have some kind of measurement,
right?
Whether it's a scale or a piece of clothing, but some kind of measurement so you know where you're starting. But to say I don't do that,
right,
is really kind of a denial,
right? But then you don't have then you have nowhere to.
What's your
context?
Make
a goal. What's your context?
Yeah, exactly.
The thing that bugged me about the scales is I would have, you know, a little soy sauce with a sushi roll, and I'm retaining 3 pounds of water. And I was like, wait, I've been running every day this week. What happened? And it's because those little things get in your mind,
right?
You talk about above the shoulders.
That's right.
What's going on in your head? It's a lot of it is the mental game and how we feel about ourselves.
Yeah.
And some people value how they feel about themselves based on what that number is.
Yeah, absolutely. And the key, by the way, for those who do weigh themselves, it's once a week.
Yep.
It's the same day, same time, and the same clothes or no clothes, but it's once a week and that's it. People say weigh yourself several times a week. No way.
No way.
You'll be a basket case because your body naturally fluctuates 2-3 pounds in the course of a couple of days, just naturally, like you said. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're retaining water, sometimes you're not. Once a week is the real way to do it.
That's a huge takeaway, everybody listening, because I know so many people that are the daily addicted to their scale, and that's okay. You can rest and recover from your scale, too.
That's right.
Dr. Ian, how do people find you besides going to the store and getting Blast the Sugar out right now?
Yeah, well, please send me a post on Instagram, at Dr. Ian Smith, spell the doctor out, I-A-N Smith, on Twitter. I'm Dr. Ian Smith, D-R Ian Smith, and our website is shredlife.com, www.shredlife.com.
Thank you for doing all you do.
It's great talking to you.
You too. And
it went so fast.
Doing it. It did. It was like poof. We just blinked and it was over.
Fun, huh?
So let's come back when we want to we'll talk about cleanses because, you know, it's beach body time.
Yeah,
so we can come back with that. And then when you get your smash, your juice out.
I'll bring you some. It'll be out in 2 weeks.
Fantastic.
All right. Okay.
I look forward to it. Dr. Ian Smith, thank you so much. Blast the Sugar out. Get it now. Bookstores everywhere. Lower blood sugar. Lose weight. Live better. A 5-week program that anyone can do. I'm Jennifer Weigel and I'm at jenweigel.com. And we will see you next time.